Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, bringing you incredible women every week who share their amazing journeys in their careers and their lives. Each guest on the show offers you advice to help you learn, grow, and feel energized and empowered. Today's special guest is Shanali Burke. Shanali is an award-winning social PR strategist. I've known Shanali for years as we run in the same circles, and I have to say it's been such a pleasure. She's also an adjunct professor at the Johns Hopkins University. She's a speaker, a blogger, and she is definitely an educator, constantly sharing her insights with other professionals and brands all around the world. Shanali, it's such a pleasure to have you on my show.
Well, oh, Deirdre, it's so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, knowing you for years, you're a PR and social media expert, a speaker, no matter where you are or what you're doing, you are teaching. And, you know, both of us, we know that education is so important in our field and for any field. Tell us a little bit about how you've taken the journey from the physical classroom into the virtual learning environment.
Well, Deirdre, I have been teaching for as long as I can remember, and my family has teachers on both sides. So, you know, I think it's in the blood.
It runs in the family.
It runs in the family, goes back several generations. But after I entered the professional space of the PR and communication field, I always wanted to teach, and I found that, you know, working with clients itself is very much an educational process because you're trying to get into their heads, you're trying to understand what needs to be done for the business, but along the way you're educating them on the strategy, on why certain tactics are being applied or not, on how you're going to pull it together and so on. So for me, education has always been a part of the strategic communication business process. An opportunity came my way at the end of 2008 when one of my colleagues on the then IABC DC Metro board, because as you know, I've been a volunteer at our industry associations for many, many years. He was an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins back then and said, hey, you know, my program chair is looking for someone to teach a course on course marketing, and I think you'd be super because I had just come out of the ASPCA. So I went in to meet her. Turned out she was the wife of the former contract officer of the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery when they were a client, when I was at Ruder Finn.
Small world.
Yeah. So there were all these little connections. And long story short, course marketing was not really an area that I'd specialized in per se, but there was an opening for a course on nonprofits in the digital age. And I had just come out of one of the biggest nonprofits in the country. So
that's perfect.
Yeah, I can do this in my sleep. So I actually did start teaching in the classroom for the MA communication program. And it was very interesting that just a year or so in, Hopkins decided to start transitioning to an online format. So I started learning about online communication, education in the online space quite early in my kind of teaching career, as it were, and it was a pain in the ass.
I know. Right. It's not an easy transition sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, we had to learn Sakai. I don't know if you've ever worked in Sakai, but it is clunky. I don't know if anybody still uses it.
No, I don't think I ever did.
Clunky as hell, yeah. So we started off with Sakai. We started off with, with a hybrid model first, some classes offline, some online. Then transition to Blackboard, and then as you and I both teach also at Rutgers, and of course there we use a different...
They're e-college.
Mm-hmm, e-college from Pearson. And so I think having that background, it was a very natural transition for me to start my own courses. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about doing these courses now in this day and age is that the entire field of online education has just exploded. exploded. There are so many more different platforms. They're really affordable.
Right.
They're like WYSIWYG interfaces.
Yeah.
You know, what you see is what you get. They're really easy for you to put together. You have WordPress plugins that allow you to do this. And my experience as a blogger just helped with all of that because I'm comfortable with WordPress. So when it came to designing my own online course, I was already comfortable with doing webinars, having done those for so many years, you know, probably going on 10 years now, that all of those pieces just came together. And the transition from physical space to online was really, I mean, for me, it was seamless, quite frankly, outside of, you know, the learning of the technology, which obviously there's a learning curve. At any time, you have to learn a new technology. But I'd been through the paces when it came to the process, as it were, and the systems, and how do you get it going, and kind of the instructional design side of things. And that was wonderful training from Hopkins back in the day when I first started with my courses there, and then later on with Rutgers as well. So all of that came together really nicely for me.
So when, you know, you just mentioned design.
Yeah.
So do you feel that you can design a better experience or, you know, educational experience for the student? Talk a little bit about that in the online environment.
You know, I think you can design a great experience offline or online. That's on you, depending on how closely you're listening to the needs of the students. So if you're taking into account what your market is telling you, what your audience is telling you, you're looking at what your service offering is and what differentiates you, and how closely can you match your skills and your body of knowledge to what students need and the body of knowledge they need to acquire. If you can find a good match for that and you're creative, then I think you can design a great experience offline as well as online. The one thing that I have noticed consistently about online courses is that it can demand much greater interaction from the student's point of view. Now, again, this will differ depending on whether it's a degree course or a certificate. You know, is it a course as at a university like Hopkins or Rutgers, or is it something that's more of an informational product, as, you know, as my online course, where it's kind of on demand and there's no requirement for the students to actually complete the course in a specific period of time. But overall, I think there is a lot of flexibility with the online courses and the online space, which makes it easier for students because they can take it anytime. And that's one thing that I think now most universities and folks who offer informational products are moving towards. It's not necessarily you log on at this time, you finish it by this time, and boom, you're done. If you're in a credit program, obviously you need to complete it, you know, during your semester. But even within that construct, my students can log on anytime during that course week. So as long as they have their assignments done by the time they're due, it doesn't matter to me whether they're doing it on Monday night at 10 p.m. or Wednesday morning at 5 p.m. It completely depends on their schedule. So I think students find that very appealing, and that makes them more likely to want to engage in online education, which then makes for a better instructional experience, and then you can design for that. So I kind of backed into that answer.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think for the business professional today who wants to have continuing education, you need that flexibility. I think there's also, you know, there's only so much time to spend. Do you see continuing education as the most important time spent? Or, you know what, listen, you got to be out there networking, or is it both? In business, it seems that, you know, that's both are really necessary.
Yeah, I think it is one of those answers where it is both. And then that begs the question, well, how do you do it all? Because there's only 24 hours in the day. And I think then it comes down to a question of, well, a couple of things. One is prioritization, you know, necessary is it for you to go to this event, if it's an event that you're going to for networking purposes, or are there ways for you to harness the networking powers of social media and social networking, which is what people like you and I do? And I think people... people like you and I almost do it instinctively. You're like, we can't help it.
What's wrong with us?
We're kind of networking and teaching and all of that at the same time. But I find that, there's the networking aspect that is can often be built into courses. And that comes with designing the interactive piece. So are there discussion forums, as I have in my degree program, or... For my online course, there's a private Facebook community where, you know, anyone who's registered for the course can come together and ask questions. And that really becomes kind of the lab, as it were. And that's networking, too.
Oh, I love that, the lab.
Yeah, because all of these are business professionals. At the end of the day, I think it comes down to opportunity cost. You know, if you do X, what are you giving up in terms of time and opportunities? And is it worth it? And your priorities are going to dictate that. But I think smart networking is really the name of the game. And when you are networking in a smart way, then you are also participating in some shape or form in education.
Right. So you had mentioned social media. And I know that we are always on social media. There's so much going on, a lot of networking, a lot of learning. Tell me, what do you love about social media and what do you hate?
So I love... so much about social media. I mean, the doors that it has opened for me, the people I have come to meet. I mean, you and I met offline first, but I think, and I mean, I'll say this because it's true. You and I are really, really good friends. I'm so grateful. But I do think being connected online has given our relationship a different dimension that then you and I both chose to explore in the offline space as well.
Exactly. Social media made us closer, in a sense. Even though we met in person, social media made us closer, and then we still meet in person.
Yeah. So, I think there's that ability to tap into some really interesting conversations, to meet new people. There's really no... geography just disappears. I mean, you can be talking to people in Russia and in South America and in Alaska and in Australia. And, you know, I mean, we do it all the time. So geography really disappears and it just kind of opens your horizons. It expands your horizons so much. However, it can be a real time suck. Because you can just, you know, you can go down the rabbit hole. That's true of anything online. And I think the flip side to this wonderfully expanded horizon is that if you become entrenched in certain spaces and certain communities, you start to live in a bubble and you start to lose context. You can become very insular because it's what these people think and what matters here. And it's like, dude, it's not that important. You know, 9 times out of 10,
right,
what you're talking about is not that important. Who gives a, you know, I don't know what epithets I can say on air or not, but really, you know, who gives a flying fish sometimes?
Exactly. That's so true. So, you know, spending your time on social media and being strategic about your communication, that begs the next question. And in 140 characters or less, no, I'm kidding. Just kind of tell us, what's your number one tip? Give the listeners a tip when it comes to social media and strategic communication.
The number one tip that I can give to anyone on social media and strategic communication is that the operative word in that phrase is strategic.
Hello.
Social media has to be a part of your overall strategy. You can have strategic elements and you should have strategic elements to your use of social channels, but ultimately effective use of social media will be part of an overall holistic communication strategy.
Excellent. I'm speaking with my special guest, Shanali Burke, social PR strategist. In the next segment, Shanali will share more thoughts on strategic communications and strategy.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show, where Shanali Burke and I were just discussing social media and being strategic in your communication. Okay, so Shanali, let's pick up the discussion on strategy. Do you find that businesses today are becoming more or less strategic with social media and their marketing and PR efforts as technology advances? What's going on?
So I think businesses and organizations are certainly becoming much more aware of the power of communication through social channels, but they tend still to get lost in the tools. So I hear a lot about, you know, what's our Twitter strategy going to be, or what's our Facebook strategy? And I actually, as I was thinking about this, getting ready to talk to you, I wrote down a phrase which I think I need to use in a blog post. You know, back in the day when the phone arrived, it was brand new. So it was like, oh, what is this?
The shiny object.
What is this shiny object that I pick up one end and you pick up the other end and we can hear each other talk even if we are not in the same room, you know? That's the
great piece of technology.
This is a very, very great piece of technology. You know, there's all of these. That's by my educated Indian accent. So, but then we got used to it, and it's just become one of the ways in which we communicate with each other. So, businesses don't go around saying, "What's our telephone strategy?"
No,
you know,
exactly.
Nobody says, "Hey, Deirdre, what's our phone strategy for this month?" Or, you know, for the book or for the show. It's like, how many people are you going to call and blah, blah, blah.
If they did, I'd laugh.
Right? So it's really about what are your business objectives? What do you need to achieve? And how are you going to put together the most effective mix of channels with which you're going to communicate to your audiences? And I think that's what businesses have to remember. And it's still really, really hard for them to remember that, I think, because there's still a level of executives who are not comfortable with social networks.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, forget about being digital natives. They accept it now that it's not going anywhere because now they see their grandchildren using these platforms. But it's still not innate to them. And so for them, it's really, really hard to deal with this. So they kind of fall back on these older platforms and older methods of thinking about things. And because they get so caught up in the tools, they really have shiny object syndrome and they will want to go with the biggest platform out there and, you know, something that has all the bells and whistles. But at the end of the day, if you're not actually extrapolating the intelligence that those platforms can give you, and you don't have someone sitting and looking at the data and extracting the stories that those data can tell you, what's the point? So I think, I think a lot of businesses still can spend a lot of money foolishly.
Yeah, you know? I think you're right, the point that you said that things don't come naturally for certain executives. At the same time, I feel as a communicator, there's a duty that we have to make sure that all of our communication and whatever channels we're selecting to reach the right audiences, we have to show or at least let them know this is how our communication does tie to the business. And this is how we're measuring and how we're going to track back to those objectives so that it's almost like, you know, connecting the dots.
Yeah.
And I think that goes a long way. And that falls on us.
It does fall on us. And I'm not going to name the company because I get no pleasure out of, you know, dissing companies. Everyone's trying to do their best at the end of the day. But there's one particular company that's in the monitoring space, and many others do this as well. But this one particular company has been sending out this email I do not sign up for these lists, but they put me on the list anyway, and it pisses me off. So if anyone is listening from the vendor side of things, do not add me to your friggin' list without my permission.
Or anybody else.
But anyway, they send this one infographic type thing out in their email, and it goes through how to set up your measurement and monitoring and measurement program, and they will walk you through the steps very well, like steps 1 through 8, in step 1, step 2, and it makes total sense. And then you basically send out your communication or whatever, or you count the number of hits, whatever. That's like step 8 or something along those lines. And then step 9 is, and now you rejoice because of the great success. It's like, whoa, what happened? What's the bridge between 8 and 9? I'm sorry, but that's like another 5 or 6 steps in there.
At least. You're missing, right?
Yeah. And that is that gap, you know, that we have to
close it.
And it's hard. It's not super hard, but it's not always super intuitive. I'm not going to say it can be pretty simple, but it's not always intuitive because you have to think about how you're going to make those connections and do them in a way that you're not making shit up. You're going to make numbers say anything.
Exactly. But no, we're not allowed. Yeah, and that goes to our accountability and our ethics in what we're doing. So let's transition a little bit, because we did talk about channels, which that's, you know, the communities where we hang out, where people want to get their news and information or be entertained. What are your favorite social communities and why?
Oof. So I really, as you know, think community is a huge part of what PR is about. It always has been, but it's really, really important in the social space. And so to that end, I really enjoy this Kimbassador Facebook group that is a...
Of course! The Skim! I think I've mentioned them either on this show or somewhere. I know they were on my blog. Fantastic.
Yeah. I think Kaylin Marcotte, who is primarily the community manager for all of the Skimbassadors, and I met up with her a while back in New York, and she's just delightful. I think they do a really good job. I think there's like 10,000 plus. I don't know if they're in that group. But
yeah, it's big.
It's big. But, you know, there's so much investment from the Skimbassadors in that community. There's a lot of really engaged conversation, very intelligent conversation. And it's also a lot of fun.
Right, just for those who don't know, just let us know what is the Skim, just for listeners who might not even know what the Skim is, because you have to be a real Skim reader to be a Skim ambassador.
Yeah, the Skim, theskimm.com, is your morning TV in your email. It's a daily on weekdays email newsletter that encapsulates what you need to know about what's going on in the world, and it does so in a very conversational, often fun, irreverent tone. That makes you want to pay attention to the news, which is why I think it's so brilliant, because one of the big problems we have is just, so many media messages and so much information overload that people are just tuning messages out. And what Danielle and Carly, the two co-founders, have done in such a brilliant way is bring the news back and make it of import. So people who love the Skim so much that they tell everyone about it and get people to sign up are called Skimbassadors, and I think, Deirdre, you're one.
Yes, I am.
And I'm one, too.
I'm not as active as you are, though. You are a true Skimbassador.
I love it. And so there's a private Facebook group for Skimbassadors, and to just, shoot the breeze or talk about what they want to see in the Skim, or right now there's a lot going on about wedding hashtags, which is pretty funny.
That is funny. Hey, what about Blab? What do you think about Blab?
I really like it.
So do I.
I love it. I really like Periscope too. Yeah. I wasn't sure about Periscope when it started, but then once I did a couple of scopes and I watched several, I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. But Blab just takes that to a whole other level. So in terms of, I've only done one Blab, funnily
Me
enough.
Me too, just one. I want to do more.
I want to do more too, because it's like, that's TV. That's TV for the digital age. I think it's brilliant.
Very cool.
Love it.
Yeah, because the audience can participate and you can, they can type in their questions, and it's really good.
great. It's great. I did a blab with Janet Fouts a couple months ago, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun.
I did my first blab yesterday with the PictoChart. It was awesome. It was really cool.
I think on your blog or somewhere. I remember reading about
that. Yeah, I probably had it on the blog, but a lot on Twitter. A lot of talk about it on Twitter, which is really fun. So, you know, going back to all the things that you do, you are one busy lady. So, right, teaching, consulting, your new online courses, you're speaking, huge amount of time. You're a ski ambassador. What do you do to relax? And how much, you know, are you carving out what I call the me time? Because I know that's really important.
Yeah, I do carve out me time. It's not very structured because I think that's one of the great assets that people like you and I have who are fortunate enough to be living life on our terms. We are working on our terms. And we're very, very blessed to be able to do that. But that means that we don't necessarily have a 9-to-5 life. And I think one of the things I had to realize and kind of have to keep reminding myself of is that I don't have a typical 9-to-5 life. And
no.
That's okay. And sometimes
we choose that.
We choose that, exactly. It's our choice. So, you know, I could be working. It depends if I have a big launch or something coming up. I'm certainly pulling the 16, 20-hour days, which is not fun. And, you know,
you don't want more of them?
You know, when you've done them for weeks on end, it gets old real quick. And that's one of the reasons that I am not a crisis communication specialist, because then that would be my life. I remember when that was my life and I was like, oh, I cannot do this anymore. So when I take my me time differs. But I do. I tend to, I've noticed that I have to have at least one day where I'm not doing anything work-related. Now, nice. I could be tweeting or texting with friends. That's different. But I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not checking email. I'm not responding to email. I'm not doing work. And more often than not, that day tends to be Saturday. It just works out that way.
What a great day.
Yeah. And then outside of that, you know, there might be days if I'm working 11, 12, plus hours, the next day I might not work, you know, 8 hours. I might work 4 hours and I have time to just decompress. But I like to exercise. My workout of choice right now is the bar method.
That's very
which
cool.
is pretty intense.
And so much more than I do. I admire you for that.
Oh my God, it's painful, but it's brilliant.
I bet.
It's painful, but brilliant. Yeah. I love to read. I'm trying to take more time just to read novels and fiction, spend time with my dogs, my husband, my friends, like, you know, like when I text you for an impromptu chat or something, and cook. I love to cook. So just, yeah, just.
Well, I know that. And you are a good cook too. So.
Also, this is a big deal. I just knitted my first full male men's sweater. Like, I've started stuff before, but never finished it.
That's
and this
impressive.
Was pretty intricate. Yeah. And this was like even including a zipper and everything. Hand knit.
Whoa.
I'm telling you, my husband better wear that thing until it unravels. And then also I have started, I've just recently gotten into adult coloring books.
That's great.
It's awesome because it's like I get so sleepy within 20 minutes. I started doing it at night because then I just go to sleep like a baby.
Oh my goodness. Well, I haven't heard anybody talk about adult coloring books, so that's a new one. That's really good to know.
Just so everyone knows, the subject matter is not adult.
How did you know that was my next question?
I know you.
Exactly.
It's all flowers and, you know, paisleys and whimsy and stuff, but
oh, that sounds really good. Shanali, who, you know, with your career, and you have an incredible career as an entrepreneur, who do you feel has influenced you the most?
Oh, gosh, I am so grateful. Oh, so many people. You know, honestly, every single person I meet or work with touches my life in some way. Truly, I'm not just saying that to be cheesy. Of course, some of the big influences would be Katie Payne.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Who's just informed so much of how I think in measurement. And, you know, it was her firm that I worked with when I was at the ASPCA, when we came up with our measurement program that, you know, went on to get a fair amount of attention. Nancy Glick, who was my boss at Ruder Finn and then a colleague at MSL Group, and who still just has an incredible work ethic, despite she's a cancer survivor. She is, you know, very old school, but so sharp, and she knows how important digital communications are. And she's one of these lifelong learners. She just has this joy of life, joy of
learning. Excellent.
Yeah, and this incredible work ethic. And I learn so much from her, even now, even though we don't work together. Patrice Tanaka has...
She was on the show. She's wonderful.
She's amazing. And, you know, kind of the joy that she brings to her work. And,
joy.
The
Joyful Planet? Is that the name of her company? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think just remembering that is so important. I've had mentors when I was back in drama school, Anamika Huxar, who, again, you know, work ethic and just kind of getting really deep into your work so that you are trying to explore it, even though this was in the context of acting, but you can bring that to any work situation. And you've influenced me, Deirdre.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because you are so kind. You know, you've achieved so much. I mean, like, somebody could do at 1/10 of what you've done and die feeling somewhat okay. But like, you've done so much and you never stop. Like, you're always learning. You're always helping others learn. You're so giving of your time. You're so giving of with students, which is so important just to help that next generation come in. And you're so kind. That's the biggest, you know, there's so many in our field. And
I didn't want to say it. I'm in any field, really. Not just ours.
You know, we kind of have this bubble more that in our field, I think, than in some others. But you're not a and you never have been.
Thank you. I'm so glad I'm not a I think I tell my husband that as soon as we're done with this.
I'm not one.
Well, thank you. And I love to give back. And, you know, I love professionals like you who help me to learn and grow, you and so many others. And I really appreciate that. So thank you. Okay. How about advice? Speaking of professionals, how about advice to other professionals who want to be more strategic in their social media? Just give it to them straight.
You have to work at it. You know, you can't expect someone else to do the work either for you or on your behalf and have it just somehow get into your system. It's going to happen. You want to be strategic.
Osmosis.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're going to get out of it what you put in. You know, there's a reason that you are where you are, Deirdre, and that people who are thought leaders in our industry or any industry, because they've done the time, they do the work. I mean, even now, you and I roll up our sleeves to sit and learn something. And I know, I think you and I have, and so many others that we're fortunate to be in contact with, like, if there's a problem, we want to figure it out. We want to figure out how to solve it. We won't sleep
until we
figure it out. We'll be Googling
relentless
or asking people or, you know, going
exactly
on. You have to do that. You have to do that. So if you want to be more strategic about your use of social media, first of all, you have to use social media.
That is the number one. You got to use it. There, you can't guess about it.
Yeah, you can't guess about it. And then you actually have to think about it strategically. Think about it holistically. Think about it from a goals, business goals, and a business outcome point of view, and figure out how to map your work to business objectives.
Definitely. That is great advice. Okay, Shanelly, where can my listeners find out more about you and your new online course?
I would love for your listeners to visit socialprvirtuoso.com. That is the new online hub of my training programs, which, as you said, Deirdre, I just launched my first course, which went off super, super well. And I currently closed it because I had so many people sign up, but I will be reopening it again very soon. So when they go to socialprvirtuoso.com, they'll find a landing page where they can plug their information in to get on my email list, because I do not add people who do not subscribe on there. But I will be reopening my course pretty soon, and as well as introducing a lot more on the online training side of things. So if you are a bodacious badass who your social PR swagger on, then socialprvirtuoso.com is where to go.
That's awesome. Shanali, thank you for sharing all of your strategic insights on education, PR, social media, strategic communication. Really, really great advice today. Thank you.
Deirdre, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'd also like to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. And until we meet again for our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.